Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. It is a question involving a man and his wife. But because he is the Russian ballet star Alexander Godunov, who defected earlier this week, and she is his Russian ballerina wife, it is a question now wrapped with intense diplomatic implications. Ludmila Vasova, also a Bolshoi member, was put aboard a Soviet Aerofloat plane from Moscow late yesterday afternoon at New York's Kennedy Airport. But resolving the question whether she wants to go home or stay with her husband has kept the plane on the ground since. Jim Kilpatrick reports.
Throughout the night, the Soviet jetliners sat blocked at the gate by cars from the Customs and Immigration Service. Inside the terminal, Russian and American diplomats tried to negotiate a settlement. Frequent calls to Moscow and Washington. The Americans wanted to talk with the wife of the Soviet defector in private, off the plane. No, said the Russians, you can talk on the plane, which they considered their territory. The delicateness of the international confrontation became obvious upon the arrival of the U.S. Deputy Ambassador to the United Nations, Donald McHenry.
Soviet citizens are still on the plane. We still are working on the original problem, and I don't know when we'll have it resolved.
More than 30 American passengers were held on the plane most of the night, pawns in the negotiating process. Passenger Arthur Northrup, an Indianapolis attorney, was critical of U.S. actions.
There is no excuse for the State Department allowing that lady to get on the plane. As far as I'm concerned, I'm still waiting to get back on the plane when they get that lady off of there and give her a chance for a free choice. And I appreciate that has to be done.
Early this morning, the American passengers were taken to an airport hotel. The scene around the gate resembles a spy movie. Russian agents clustered against one wall, watching U.S. agents gathered on the other side. Jim Kilpatrick, CBS News at New York's Kennedy Airport.
In Washington, both Attorney General Benjamin Civiletti and Deputy Secretary of State Warren Christopher stood by through most of the night, Christopher filling in for the vacationing Secretary Vance. Both the President and the Vice President are out of Washington today as the drama proceeds at Kennedy Airport. The President at Camp David, the Vice President, arriving this morning in Peking to begin a week-long visit. Jed Duval has that story.
Vice President Walter Mondale had said on the way over that the Chinese are taking this visit of his seriously. If he needed proof, it was waiting for him at the bottom of the airplane steps. The little man in the gray suit, Vice Chairman Deng Xiaoping. The presence of the all-important Deng, the man who is leading China toward modernization and opening up to outside countries, lends authority to the Mondale visit. From the airport ceremonies, the American delegation headed for a couple of hours' rest before an informal dinner hosted by the foreign minister, Wang Hua. The evening may be purely social, or it may get down to business. There is plenty of that to be gone over during Mondale's week-long stay in China. He brings specific proposals for widening the contacts between the two societies, commerce, culture, science. Proposals Mondale will talk about only after he's offered them to the Chinese and heard their answers. One aspect of this trip is to help American businessmen catch up in the China trade. They're far behind their European and Japanese competitors in this market. Jet Duval, CBS News, Peking.
Back in Washington, midnight activity at the White House. A statement issued quoting White House Chief of Staff Hamilton Jordan as flatly denying as untrue. An allegation he once sniffed cocaine at the New York disco, Studio 54. The statement says a routine investigation by the FBI has been ordered, but charges that the allegation comes from criminal defendants with a clear interest in making false and sensational charges in an effort to bargain for leniency. The New York Times says the allegation came from lawyers for the disco owners who face tax evasion charges. Meanwhile, President Carter, after a brief stopover in Washington, has gone on to Camp David to continue his vacation, a stay likely to be more restful, reports Lee Thornton, than the first Mississippi River steamboat phase.
White House aides tallied 47 stops at cities and towns along the Mississippi River where President Carter spoke from a booming public address system aboard the Delta Queen. What no one could count were the number of people who turned out or the hands President Carter shook at all hours of the day and night in fair weather and in driving rain. And it is far too soon to calculate any impact, political or otherwise, though aides called the trip an unqualified success. Mr. Carter told all those crowds about his energy program and said, "We live in the greatest nation on earth." When the president returned briefly to Washington, he said he was, in his words, re-inspired in the commitment of the American people to reunite for the future. In a few days, the president goes south for more talk of energy, a trip that will include a rest stop in his hometown, Plains, Georgia. After that, he'll tackle the many other problems he faces with the Middle East, SALT, defense spending, and finding a replacement for Andrew Young at the top of the list. Lee Thornton, CBS News, Washington.
The Washington Post says this morning that Pope John Paul II will come to Washington October 6th and 7th on his U.S. visit. The Executive Committee of U.S. Mayors voted yesterday to seek White House help in meeting what the mayors call the serious social problems being created by the influx of Vietnamese refugees into this country. For one thing, Peter Collins notes from Hong Kong, this refugee flow differs from that immediately following the war.
At a refugee camp here in Hong Kong, a recent arrival from Vietnam listens intently as an interviewer's question is translated. The refugee is to be resettled shortly in Australia, and the question is, what does he know about the country? The answer is, nothing. The refugee is 45-year-old Chan Van Hong. He knows he's going to Sydney, but he doesn't know whether it's a city or where it is. He does know where Australia is because he's seen it on a map. The case is typical among the more than 66,000 boat people awaiting resettlement here. Many of them are fishermen and farmers from remote areas of northern Vietnam. They don't know such things as where Denmark is, whether France is a hot or cold country, what sort of governments are in power in Canada, Britain, or West Germany. What they do know is they don't want to go to communist countries or nations at war. So a group recently turned down offers to resettle in Ireland, thinking they were going to Belfast. The one country they feel sure about is the United States. To get around the information gap and help boat people start new lives in countries willing to take them, officials here are publishing a refugee newspaper in three languages, English, Chinese, and Vietnamese. Its name is Hope. Peter Collins, CBS News, Hong Kong.
They said it was a gesture to outgoing U.S. Ambassador Andrew Young. But for a time, at least, the issue of Palestinian rights is on the back burner at the United Nations. Mitchell Krauss reports.
Many of the delegates who spent the past 2 days in the U.N. Security Council debate on Palestinian rights are packing their bags today, heading for Cuba and a meeting of non-aligned nations in Havana. There, they'll undoubtedly review the events of Thursday and Friday, which led to an indefinite postponement of consideration of a U.N. resolution calling for Palestinian self-determination and sovereignty. When they return in September, the Security Council president will be one of them, the ambassador from Zambia, and the resolution's sponsors have reserved the right to seek a resumption of the debate. However, by mid-September, attention will shift to the General Assembly, which this year will host several heads of state, including Fidel Castro, King Hussein, and President Carter, in addition to Pope John Paul II and possibly PLO leader Yasser Arafat. In the meantime, Lebanon has sent this month's Council President Andrew Young a letter calling for an urgent meeting of the Security Council to discuss recent violence in southern Lebanon involving Israeli retaliation for PLO raids into Israel and the Lebanese government's attempt to protect both its Christian and Arab citizens, often at war with each other. But UN sources doubt such a meeting will be held this weekend. Mitchell Krauss, CBS News, New York.
Lebanese authorities say more than 100 civilians were killed or wounded by artillery shelling yesterday. In 2 days now, confessed killer Jesse Bishop is scheduled to die in Nevada's gas chamber. And he still is saying it's gone on too long, says Bishop. Monday morning, if I'm not executed or my sentence commuted to life, then there's a miscarriage of justice. Nevertheless, two public defenders are traveling to Washington this weekend to seek a stay from the U.S. Supreme Court. Meanwhile, the Nevada State Pardons Board meets later this morning to consider commutation. And its chairman, who is the governor, Robert List, finds his position somewhat uncomfortable.
It's a tough decision. It's the first time I've been in this position. I've sought the death penalty as a prosecutor and obtained it as a prosecutor. But to be accountable to the end over a man's life is something that I have not faced before. It's not an easy thing, no matter how philosophical one might get and say, well, it's necessary.
But List indicates he would still be inclined to uphold the death penalty as what he describes as a necessary evil.